This is the St. Louis Podcast Network. Welcome to the CNC Golf Factory Podcast on the St. Louis Podcast Network with Kurt Rowe and Kurt Goss III. Kurt Rowe is the executive director of the Metropolitan Amateur Golf Association, whose expertise and passion for the sport have helped shape the local golfing landscape in remarkable ways. Kurt Goss III is the head PGA professional at the prestigious Country Club of St. Albans and the 2023 Gateway PGA Merchandiser of the Year, a testament to his dedication and excellence in the industry. Together, as hosts and enthusiasts, we're here to bring you the latest news, expert analysis, and insider stories from the vibrant world of St. Louis golf. Settle in and get ready to be inspired by the wealth of knowledge and camaraderie that defines our local golfing community. Welcome to the CNC Golf Factory Podcast, where every swing tells a story. Welcome on in. It's a special edition of the CNC Golf Factory Podcast right here on the St. Louis Podcast Network. I'm Andy Hanselman, joined alongside Kurt Rowe and Kurt Goss III. Our very, very special guest is from St. Louis and competing in the U.S. Open next week at Pinehurst No. 2 in, shockingly, Pinehurst, North Carolina. We're going to be talking to Chris Nagel here in just a little bit. But first, let's say hi to Kurt and Kurt. Hi, boys. What's going on?
Hey, guys.
Hi, Andy. Guys.
How are we doing?
Good.
We're doing really well. So a little U.S. Open preview with local golfer Chris Nagel. Qualified out at the Ohio State University Golf Club Scarlet Course on Monday during the longest day of golf, they call it. It's 36 holes, and he shot 9 under and won in a playoff over Otto Black out of Detroit, Michigan, to get into the field of the U.S. Open. Coming out of that group was also Justin Lauer, Seamus Power, a name you might know, Brendan Todd, a name that some guys might know, and an amateur named Gunnar Bruyne out of Sherwood, Minnesota. Brendan, Gunnar, and Chris all finished at minus 9. What are you guys looking forward to this next week with the U.S. Open?
Well, it's always an exciting week. I mean, with my my USGA background, I mean, it's especially after we've we conducted local qualifying, which Chris made it out of. A little shout out to Gunnar Bruyne. Gunnar was always, he was one of our co-medalists at Westwood too, the amateur.
Oh, Gunnar was out of he was out of the St. Louis qualifier this year.
Yeah, he made it out of Westwood. He was 4 under. He's a University of Kansas golfer, so let's, none of our listeners hold that against him. But
right,
he's from Minnesota, but he plays at the University of Kansas. So that was kind of cool too. We were watching. I had all kinds of, final qualifying leaderboards going up on my screen. I had about 9 tabs because every single one, I was going through all of them, and I could probably find one guy or two guys at every site that either, came up here, played in our Metropolitan Open Championship, or, all the local guys. We had Will Postlewaite, Devin Liberty, obviously Chris and Gunnar. So, I was following all that on Monday to see which of these guys got out. So, it's U.S. Open week. I think it's one of the most exciting weeks of the year. It's one of the toughest tests of golf. And, Pinehurst is the golf mecca, really. I mean, especially their commitment to the U.S. Opens over the next, I think they got them scheduled out to 2050 or something, every, so many years. So
I thought I saw one scheduled like out to like 2084, where I'm going to be long gone.
Yeah. I don't know if they're that far out, but I know they're out pretty far on these U.S. Opens, and Pinehurst has them. That's going to be one of their mainstays every 5 to 6 years. I think they're, going back to Pinehurst or something. So,
Goss, what's your favorite part about U.S. Open week?
You just have to be spot on. Your entire game for these players just has to be 100% spot on. We saw it, 2014 when Pinehurst had it and Marnikheimer won. You could tell that it was literally like he hit his spots with his irons, 75% of that 4 days, he had to hit like the hood of a car in spots. I don't know if you boys have played it, but it's that old school Donald Ross. I mean, everything is bowl shape. It runs off into collection areas. And again, we know that they're the most talented players in the world. We just saw with the ladies this past week at Lancaster, I think winning at 4 or 5 under, it was a true test. But yeah,
7,000 yards. They were playing 7,000 yards.
The ladies were? Ladies.
Yeah, the women's open. Oh, I know one day the setup was right at 7,000 yards.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
But yeah, it's fun. Right. And you're all good. I think that, again, it's going to be iron play, in my opinion, at Pinehurst number two. I don't know what the conditions like, firm or, you know, if it's dry right now down there, but you know, it's going to be firm in general. But, you know, I think somebody's just going to have to come out and kill it with iron play, because if your iron play is spot on there, you can probably have some opportunities for birdie inside of 20 feet. Because if you miss it more than 20 feet away from the flag sticks, they're all running away from you anyways. So it's fun. It's leading into Father's Day. It's the heart of the summer. I just think it's a great time of year. It's a great event. And guys, I don't know about you, but you know, when I'm working a 12-hour day and I don't get a chance to see much golf, we might have golf in the shop, as you guys know, but doesn't mean we're watching it. I love coming home and watching live from the U.S. Open, live from the Masters, whether it is I have to listen to Brandel Chamblee. That's a side note. But I like watching the recap and whatnot, and the fact that you got 12 hours of coverage. So it's going to be a blast. And, you know, let's see if Chris can pull some more magic. But I don't know if I have a favorite in it right now. I haven't really thought about it. Well, Scottie Scheffler, that's kind of a given in any week right now.
Pretty much. I was looking at the broadcast schedule, and you're right. It's on from, I think, 5 in the morning till 8 o'clock at night on USA Network, NBC, and Peacock. You can watch it anytime, anywhere. And luckily for you and all the listeners out there, Brandel Chamblee will be in the booth with Dan Hicks in the 18th tower this year for the U.S. Open. How the mighty have fallen over at NBC.
Well, It'll be a great week, and you know, it's a cool property. Been fortunate to be there once, and it's just an awesome place. We actually have a member, guys, that's leaving the club at the end of this month. Him and his wife are going to be moving to Pinehurst full time, and wow. Yeah, and it's so cool talking to him about it. I'm like, what an awesome place! Like, you know, now 10 golf courses, the cradle, the putting course. Chris mentioned, or will be mentioning in this segment, Pine Needles, because of how he recorded it. Who cares? There's so much great golf down there, and then you're only a couple hours from Charlotte, a couple hours from the ocean. I'm looking forward to it. Getting psyched.
Well, let me put the U.S. Open in context a little bit. I'm looking at this. So Chris is one of 60 of the 68 to advance out of local and then out of final qualifying. That's 68 out of 9,522 who filed an entry for the U.S. Open. So for the listeners who don't understand, you know, the U.S. Open and how they get to that field of 156, that's how they done it. And he's one of 68 out of 9,522, which is,
it's virtually impossible.
Yeah. It's less than one. It's basically less than 1%.
Yeah. It's way less than
1%. That he's made it to the U.S. Open.
That is probably a harder feat for him than making the cut, you know. Yeah, it mean incredible. And you know, I hope that he has the you know, the rest of the season. I hope he gets to the point where he doesn't have to do Monday qualifiers anymore, because he's such a great player. But we also know that there's a lot of good players, and it's a tough game. But what a crazy stat, less than 1%, you know. Tell him to go buy a lottery ticket or two.
Exactly. Yeah. Chris Nagel coming up next right here on the CNC Golf Factory podcast on the St. Louis Podcast Network. He recently qualified for his third U.S. Open. Local St. Louis golfer, pro golfer, Chris Nagel joins us on the CNC Golf Factory right here on the St. Louis Podcast Network. Chris, what's going on, man?
Not much. Just came back home after a little whirlwind there and getting ready to go for next week.
When are you going to head out to Pinehurst?
I'm going to go on Sunday afternoon.
Awesome. Will you get to play Sunday, or you have to wait till Monday to go play your practice round?
I'm going to wait till Monday. Just Sunday, travel day, kind of do my kind of rituals, my gym work, my stretching, you know, I'm not a spring chicken anymore. So after sitting on a plane, I got to stretch out.
You're not going to load up the family truckster and head out there?
No, that's too far of a drive.
It is a long drive out there. Oh, wow. So I think the boys have lots of questions for you. Just want to get things going here.
Yeah, Chris. Hey, thanks. Thanks again for jumping on with us tonight. Now we can definitely call you a friend of the show. Your second go around here on the CNC Golf Factory. So, you know, right out of the gate, obviously, congratulations. You know, on getting it done over there in Columbus, Ohio, on Monday. You know, you got through local qualifying here in St. Louis, which we, you know, I'm gonna touch on that a little bit to get started. You know, did you tell us a little bit about, you know, just that day. Did you have you ever been in a, what, we have a nine for one playoff that day? You ever been in a playoff like that?
No, not that big. I was actually trying to think about that. I think maybe the biggest one I've ever been was like a 6 for 1 kind of deal, or like a 7 for 3, but never 9 for 1. The odds are so stacked against you there.
Well, you got it done early that day. You the whole playoff ended up only going, you know, 3 holes, but that was exciting. Just the fact that you got through that, and then obviously takes you into you know, final stage where you've been through. I mean, how many final stage of qualifyings have you been through in, you know, in your career for US Open?
You know, I should probably know that. I would have to say I've probably been to 6 or 7 sectionals now. Successful in 3. Yeah, just happy to get through it at Westwood. How good was that place? That place was pure.
That's about as good as I've ever seen Westwood, even considering we had 1.5 inches of rain, you know, the night before. But that was, yeah, Westwood is as good as I've ever seen it this year. It was phenomenal. So,
and especially with how early it was in the season as well, because you guys played that qualifier a week or 2 weeks early.
Yeah, it was April 29th. They do a pretty heavy, aggressive, you know, it's a Bermuda golf course where they do a pretty heavy overseeding now. And it was just phenomenal. It was in great shape. So, anyway, you survived the playoff there at Westwood, get through, and comes down to you and, Will Hocker, another guy played his golf here in St. Louis. So from that moment on, you're preparing yourself for June 3rd, I guess, right? I mean, you had over a month before the final stage of qualifying. How do you spend a month, you know, preparing yourself for, you know, knowing what's at stake?
Yeah, there's a little bit of time in between those two. I played 4 Korn Ferry events between local and sectionals, and actually, I'll take that back. I played 3. I was coming from Dallas the night before to the local, and then I played Kansas City, Corn Ferry, Knoxville Corn Ferry, and Raleigh Corn Ferry, and then went up to Columbus to the sectional there.
This is your third final stage qualifying. Have you done them all in Columbus, or you've gone? I know. Well, the one you qualified for was in Texas, the first one years ago.
Yeah,
right?
I was down at Shadowhawk in Texas. Great place, great golf course. It's not on the rotation anymore. And then I've done Memphis when that was the spot. That's probably been 5 or 6 years now that has not been a sectional. Yeah, I like going back to Columbus. They mix the courses up there, so I kind of played them all kind of now. But they run a larger than normal site because of the memorial. But this year was the week before, so it was a smaller site.
Right.
I was with friend of the show, Mike Surrey, the head pro out at Oak Brook Golf Course last night, chit-chatting a little bit before league. And I was telling him that we were going to talk to you tonight. And he goes, "Oh yeah, I played the last time I played in the sectional qualifier. I played with Chris." And he was telling me a story about how you were telling him that if you didn't qualify, that this was it. And I think that was back in 2018 or so. Is that right?
Yeah, 2018. I got through to Shinnecock in a wild playoff there as well. I was dabbling in different things, seeing if I wanted to keep playing, seeing what else was available, but I kind of got on a little hot streak there and we're still playing.
He told me that he quit playing in those when after he would win a qualifier, you know, go get through the local qualifier, go to the section and have them battle Tony Finau shooting a 63 to get out of it. So,
yeah. Going back to, in 2018, not only you got through, you had a playoff as well there to get into the Open.
Yes.
And then you had a crazy inning just to that round, if I remember right. Didn't you made eagle, or was that the one where you made eagle or something in the last couple holes? Yeah. Or you were getting down to the wire?
Yeah, we were coming down to I played my last five in 6 under par.
Right.
Eagled the last to get into the playoff and then birdied the first playoff. So it was just kind of like a fast finish. I played good all day, and then in those qualifiers, you're going up against guys that are in good form and someone's going to play awesome. So I was playing solid, and I just had a really fast finish to get in that playoff back in 2018.
Chris, that's a heck of a way to finish. We have some guys in men's league, I think, tonight that finished that way, but they were getting one or two pops per hole to get their net eagles. But so I recall, I think it was just 2 years ago, on the back range of St. Albans, you were hitting some balls, and I was probably picking dandelions, let's be honest. But you were preparing for, was it 2 years ago, was the last U.S. Open for you, 2022?
Yes.
Yeah, so you were preparing for that, and you kind of said that, you know, let's see if I can have one more run at it, and you get in. You make the cut, and then I think you rifle off, four out of five PGA Tour Monday qualifiers, I think it was, to kind of put your name around the – not just around St. Louis, obviously, but more around the United States. You became kind of that, I'd like to say Patrick Reed about 15 years ago, 12 years ago, whatever, when he was Monday qualifier. And so do you have that – I feel like you have that run now again. You've had a good couple Korn Ferry Tour events the past couple weeks. You have, obviously, Monday. Is this the breakthrough that we all been waiting for?
I sure hope so. game's rounding into good form. So I would love to have another run. I feel like this game, you kind of go on runs because it's so difficult. I mean, you can't own it. It comes and goes just as fast as anything. So if you can get on a run, you got to go for it because you don't know how long it's going to last.
Yeah.
Speaking of those kinds of runs, something that I like when we talk to professional golfers on the show, I like to kind of relate back to the amateur golfer. And I like to break my game down into four different areas: driving, iron play, chipping, and putting. And the reason that I'm an amateur and a 12 or 13 handicap is because none of them always work at the exact same time. Do professional golfers have the same problems? I'm sure that you do, but maybe just not to the extent of the amateur. You can recover better from them, correct?
Yes. I feel like professionals, you just manage it better. It's never hard for anybody except for, the select hand few that are the best in the world, you're driving it good, you're missing putts, or your iron play is good and you're not making putts. That's what normally happens, but you just kind of manage it a little bit better. And we're doing it day in and day out, where the average golfer or amateur is playing once, twice a week. So you kind of can figure out, how to get it around.
Yeah. That's good insight, because that's a lot of amateurs that I talk to. We always talk about the same thing, about just nothing ever really coming together. So that's good insight from a guy who does it day in and day out.
So, Chris, with a couple good finishes this past month on the Korn Ferry Tour, we were speaking briefly last night. It sounds like you're obviously, we got U.S. Open in just a week. Check mark there. It sounds like you pretty much have your path for the rest of the season on the Korn Ferry Tour. If you could let the listeners know kind of where things stand for the rest of 2024 for you.
Yeah. So I started the year with conditional status from last year's points list. So I wasn't guaranteed any starts this year. And I was able to get into a couple of South America events and played solid down there. So they'd shuffle guys around every four events. And so I was able to shuffle in front of some guys that didn't play as well. And then the last 3 weeks, I think I had 20th, 40 something, and a 13th or tied 14th finish last week. So I have enough points that that will kind of shuffle me through the rest of the year without having to, you know, be too concerned on what events I'm going to get into and what I won't. So I can kind of set a schedule. That's, I took this week off because I didn't want to play seven in a row. Just, I can do it physically, but mentally this game wears you down. So I thought it was a good idea to just, you know, take a breather for a few days, and I'm going to play US Open next week. And then the two Corn Ferry events after that. And then they have a week break in the schedule. So I feel like I can play three in a row and be pretty fresh. But yeah, I'm looking forward to the rest of the Corn Ferry year because I can kind of set my schedule, play where I want to play, and be ready to go.
That's great. Chris, I want to kind of still talk about, obviously, you on the road chasing your PGA Tour card, and we all, fingers crossed, are pulling for you. I've just become just the biggest fan over the past 7-8 years getting to know you, and I just love how you're always in good spirits, and it's hard not to root for you. So with all that being said, can you kind of give a deep dive briefly how challenging it can be, not the golf portion, but being on the road, different cities, different hotels? I know that you have a loving wife, three boys. We know that you love to fire up that green egg, and you always got some good looking meat products on there, and I always see it when I'm hungry. And how do you manage that part? Because I know it can get lonely. We know what happened about a week and a half ago to a PGA Tour player. It's a challenge. And I think some people just think that it's a cakewalk, and it's not. You're working on the game religiously. But more importantly, what's it like to balance being away from four loved ones so many weeks in a row?
Yeah, it's tough. It's a great question. I have a great kind of small group of guys that I play with, like practice rounds and eat dinner with and travel with. One of them, Adam Long, he's now played on tour for a while, so I haven't really been around him. In Bogota this year. So it was good to see him again. But Bo Hoag is another friend of mine, and been traveling with him over the last couple of years. So you just kind of hang tight with your group, and you know, that's your kind of your family on the road. And yeah, being gone is tough on the little boys. I try to get home. I'll try to come home Sunday nights and fly out on Tuesday mornings so that I can touch base with the family and, you know, still be as involved as I watch a couple of FaceTime baseball games and, you know, basketball games over the early part of the year. So, yeah, it's tough. But I guess with anything that you're trying to chase, you got to have a little bit of sacrifice, and the people around you have to support you. And I definitely have the support, and I'm trying to give it my all because they're sacrificing, you know, time away from me, and I'm sacrificing time away from them. So I only, you know, it's only fair that I give it my all to, you know, break through.
That's awesome. And I know you have a great support system that they're rooting for you. And hopefully they, you know, will they be down at Pinehurst with you next week?
Yes, they're coming down on Tuesday.
That's awesome. What an experience to see dad, husband out there inside the ropes at number two. And, you know, we all have a good feeling that you're going to make another cut. Yeah, that's fun, and I'm glad you have a good support team around you during your time away because, again, you're chasing a dream, trying to put food in the green egg, and you just got to be away traveling all the time. We all have support systems, and the golf takes us away, but it's very rewarding, so that's awesome.
It's not only food in the green egg. I mean, sometimes, you know, you get 8 and 10 ribeyes on that thing sometimes, Chris. I mean, that's not, you know, not everybody's doing that. That's a little crazy sometimes. So,
yeah, we have a lot of family in town and we get a lot of help with our boys. And so it's only fair that I, you know, feed the army.
So Chris, you're heading to Pinehurst. Have you been to Pinehurst before?
I have not. I've been to that area. I played an e-golf event when that tour was going at Pine Needles.
Yep.
But I've never been to Pinehurst Resort or any of the golf courses there. And that was probably 10, 12 years ago. So I don't really remember much of it, but I just remember there's a ton of golf. And then, I can't wait to get there.
Well, you've played, this is going to be your third U.S. Open. So, you know, that part, you shouldn't be surprised what to expect. You've played Shinnecock, you played the Country Club, you know, Pinehurst number 2 is obviously known for it's already hard, but it's even going to be, you know, harder with a U.S. Open setup. So what's your, do you have a different mentality going into this U.S. Open than you did 2 years ago or even 2018? You know, just knowing what the, you know, what lies ahead and what a challenge and a test of golf the U.S. Open is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely looking forward to the challenge. Yeah, like you said, it's you're going to play, you know, some of the hardest setups you can ever imagine in golf. But yeah, I feel like I've practiced and I've played and I've earned my spot here, so I've got a couple under my belt, and I would I'd love to. I know I've played decent in the last couple. I'd love to just, you know, improve on that and kind of test my skills against what the USGA has for us.
Hey Chris, real quick. I have been fortunate enough to be to been to Pinehurst before about 5 years ago. Ironically, I did drive with two fellow PGA professionals from the area, Marvin from Sunset Country Club and Jeffrey from Bellerive. We drove all throughout the night, showered at the first destination in Pinehurst. We played the Dormy Club. It was a bad idea, so kudos to getting a flight. And I know that the player lounge for you at a tour event at the U.S. Open, I'm sure, is all catered and done. But I will tell you that Pinehurst at the Carolina Hotel has like one of the best breakfast buffets like in the world. And there's a gentleman playing a piano. I don't know if that will be set up for you guys next week, but if you have a chance, go in there, and it's one of the greatest hours of your life. Just don't eat too much. You got a long walk each day.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because the breakfast has been mentioned several times by several different people. So I'm kind of looking forward to this.
See? Yeah.
Are you staying at the Carolina?
Yeah, I was going to ask you that too.
Sorry.
We're fortunate enough to – we rented a house for the week because we got a bunch of family coming in. So we're not too far, about a mile and a half, but I'll sneak over there for breakfast.
You think Riggs from St. Charles, you know, Riggs from Barstool Sports, him and his brother, I think, own a house right on number 2 they bought a couple of years ago. You think they would have been gracious enough to take care of the St. Louis boy?
Oh, man. I bet they're having some parties there this week or next week.
Oh, no, they don't party. Just having a bunch of Trulies all day.
Bunch of Trulies. And then another YouTuber, Mr. Short Game, he did a little behind-the-scenes tour. He was there as a guest at the Carolina, but then he snuck in to the members pro shop and the members restaurant and the members locker room, which I believe was the locker room that you guys get to use at the facility as well. And they were incredible. It was absolutely incredible. And so I like that kind of stuff because they have, it's like Augusta National. They have a special logo for the members only stuff. So you got to make sure you go raid that thing too.
So Chris, real quick, I think the three of us would like to know, and all of our listeners, I don't think last time we got to dive into it, but could you give us a little more of your backstory, again, where you grew up and how you got started playing the game of golf and when it really took off and where you saw it progress and you knew you had something special for our listeners, please?
Yeah, so I originally from Southern California. My dad worked for Monsanto when they were headquartered here in St. Louis, so that's how we ended up moving from Southern California to St. Louis, and I hadn't played any golf in California. Like, it wasn't a thing. My dad played occasionally, and it was there if I wanted to, but it, I had just had no interest. I was a, you know, baseball kid and soccer and other sports. So, we moved to St. Louis when I was, sixth grade, and, still played baseball. And then I got to high school and realized that I wasn't going to play much more baseball than about two innings every game. So I figured I would do something different, and had some friends that played golf, and we went play golf on spring break, and it was kind of fun. And, I got some instruction from my dad, and, you know, kind of got decent at it fairly quick. Wasn't a standout in high school or anything, but enjoyed playing, and, got to senior year, and I was, you know, a little bit better and playing in some of the amateur stuff and, shooting some decent scores. So tried to play in college and ended up settling at Missouri Baptist University for my last few years, and had a pretty good, little NAIA career, I guess you want to call it. And was able to get, and was able to become my NAIA All-American and win us some, a few events my senior year. And, I really didn't want to get a job. So, so I tried to play professionally, like the Hooters Tour, was going then, and some of the e-golf, and I had a little success, not much, but enough to kind of keep going. And, I guess just never giving up. I always gave myself a chance, and, it's just kind of worked out. So I feel like maybe I could have, you know, accomplished a little bit more as I've gone along, but, I guess I'm more proud of myself of just never giving up and still being able to play the game and playing it at the highest level at 40 years old that I ever have. So, that's kind of where I'm at.
That's awesome. Just that's good words for everyone out there. Just never give up. I mean, it's a very cool, a story for a guy that really doesn't pick up the game until, you know, 14, 15, 16 years old. And, you know, here we are. That's awesome. Love it.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited for the future. I feel like I got a lot of good golf ahead of me, even though I'm, you know, not 23, like these young kids coming out of college that bomb it and, you know, can shoot these super low scores. I feel like I got some good golf
in my future. Well, you do bomb it, and you can shoot super low scores. Yeah. That's why you're still doing this each and every week. So don't count yourself out yet. You hit it plenty far.
That's right.
Was one of the first professional tournaments that you won that really kind of helped you keep going? And what you know, tell the listeners about that.
So my first like kind of big professional was e-golf tour. It was in Hilton Head Island on a place called Chichese Creek and Old Field. We played two courses that week, two really good golf courses. And it was cold, and it was February, and so the weather was not ideal. And so it was just like I'd been playing it at home, you know, because I didn't go anywhere that winter. I stayed here and played in all the terrible weather we get throughout the winter, and went down there, and I was like, oh, I'm used to this. And I played really well, and I won like 25 grand. I thought I was rich. And, you know, that just kind of springboarded me and kept me going. And I really didn't have to, I was fortunate enough. Really didn't have to go and try to find, like sponsors. I kind of, you know, every dollar I made, I just kind of used that to keep playing on. And so, that was my first kind of professional win. And that kept me going for a while.
Before you started qualifying for U.S. Opens, did you have much previous success in USGA, other events like the amateur and junior amateur, things like that?
I qualified for the U.S. Amateur at Marion. I want to say that was probably like 2006 or 7.
Sounds about right.
But no, I didn't even make match play. I probably shot like 10 or 12 over, maybe even higher. But I had not had any success in USGA events. That was the only one I've played. And even like in the local stuff, I wasn't, you know, like I wasn't winning any of it. I could finish probably in the top 5 to 15, but I hadn't had much success. But I just kept kind of going, and we're still going.
You know, I know you've got a great support, not only and your family, we talked about that, but at Meadowbrook Country Club, that's your home club. And I know they support you, you know, quite a bit. So I'd like to, you know, give them a little shout out and give you an opportunity to, you know, give them a shout out. You know, that's been your home for a while. And, you know, I talked to other, you know, people over Meadowbrook, and they follow you and all that. And that's such a big support system to you as well. And get, you know, that's your home. When you're here in St. Louis, your home track to practice and play at.
Yeah, Meadowbrook's been unbelievable. It's probably an understatement. They've, you know, given me kind of, I guess, more support than I deserve. But I am welcoming it, and I got nothing but respect for everybody there. They've been behind me for, I don't know, 20 years now. So, it's kind of hard to put into words there. It's home for sure. I love going out there. It's kind of hard to go out there and practice because, you know, I spend 4 hours out there practicing, but two of it's talking to all the members because they want to know what's going on and catching up. And so it's kind of hard, but I wouldn't have it any other way, I guess. And the facility is awesome. They've made some really good improvements a couple years ago. Already good golf course. The staff, I mean, the pro shop staff and general manager, and it's just I can't say enough good things about it. It's just a great spot to be. I'm very fortunate, very grateful to be there.
Chris, for those that want to follow you, there is a Chris Nagel Tracker Twitter account. I think it's called at Chris Nagel Tracker. I think maybe one of the members out of Meadowbrook that's put that together. Somebody has. But anyway, it's really cool, and they can pretty much follow you shot by shot throughout the rest of the season. And didn't know if you knew all about that one or not.
Yeah, I know about it. I don't think I can reveal the gentleman's identity quite yet. But,
secret.
Yeah.
I have met him. I have met him. Unfortunately, I can't think of his name right now. So his secret's still safe. But I have met the guy. So,
yeah, he's a great guy. His name's Tommy Boner.
That's right.
He's about just to have a baby. But yeah, he runs that. I'm not on Twitter, so I don't see it. I see occasional email screenshots someone sends me, but it's pretty cool of him to take time out of his day to do that.
It's one of the good parts of Twitter. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. No hedging questions. So here's what I got for you. All right. Your favorite TV show?
The Big Bang Theory.
Great show. Best concert you've been to?
Probably Dave Matthews is pretty cool.
Pretty good show too. I've been to four of those. Go-to post-round meal?
Chipotle.
Best sport you played besides golf?
Is fishing a sport?
Yeah.
I like to fish. Love to fish.
What's your favorite local restaurant?
Paul Mono's.
Favorite local golf course?
Lewis and Clark at St. Albans.
It's a good course. Favorite national golf course?
Olympic Club.
And finally, your go-to post-round drink?
Well, if I was to drink, it would probably be some sort of spicy lemonade and tequila.
There you go. But since you don't drink, what is it, Diet Coke? You're a Diet Coke guy?
No.
How about a Fresca?
I'm pretty boring. I just drink water every day.
Hey, you know what? There's only one way that you can walk, you know, four rounds of Pinehurst, and that's by just pounding water, right? Not pounding Diet Cokes out there with Daily.
Yeah, I can't do that. I know my limits.
I'm about ready to get a Diet Coke in a few minutes. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Diet Coke, too. It's really good for you.
You got to go.
We have it on.
Go real, you got to have the real deal.
No, no. That's how I maintain my weight, Chris. You've seen me. If I didn't drink Diet Coke, my 38 waist could be a 42.
I wish I was a 42.
I'm 42 in age. How about that?
There you go. Chris, anything else you want to add to our little conversation here?
Well, I'm just grateful you guys asked me to be on this. Always fun talking to you guys.
I was going to ask you too. Has any other large media conglomerates as big as the CC Golf Factory podcast reached out to you?
No, it's I know that the first couple US Opens I played in, it was like people wanted to talk to me, and this time no one wanted to talk to me. And it's kind of nice, honestly.
I bet.
I like just kind of staying low key. This is nice. I like talking to you guys. You guys are fun. But yeah, no one's really reached out, which, you know, secretly I'm just fine with.
I would imagine so. So, well, we appreciate you spending so much time with us this evening. The best of luck at Pinehurst. Have a blast. Soak it all in. And, I know you made all these Korn Ferry plans, man. I want you to win this damn thing.
I mean, somebody's got to win it.
That's right. Scotty Scheffler. You can't win everything.
Yeah, golf ball doesn't know who's hitting it, so.
Right, exactly.
Chris, we are all super proud of you, seriously. Yeah. Not a better dude to root for, so go out there, enjoy it, enjoy your time with your family, and, just make another cut, and then just climb up that leaderboard, and we're going to see you on the PGA Tour full-time before you know it, man. Proud of you.
Yes, thank you. I'm looking forward to the week, just I'm going to stay patient and put one foot in front of the other and enjoy it.
He's playing in the 124th U.S. Open at Pinehurst next week. Been talking to Chris Nagel. Chris, thanks so much for joining us on the CNC Golf Factory podcast.
Good to be with y'all.
Content on the St. Louis Podcast Network is 100% human created.